I thought you'd really like this sermon tonight, Pastor Don. Figured you'd find it really applicable.
Oh, okay.
Tonight's sermon, I figured you'd really find it applicable. So that's why we're talking about it tonight. Oh, if you have a Bible, go ahead and... You know, I was standing back there talking to Dave, and there was something I was going to have him bring up on Google Images. I'll have you type in ready mix or concrete truck drum. Type that in. We're going to look at it here in a minute. Has anyone here ever had a bad job? Anyone have a bad job? Maybe we should even back up and ask you if you thought of anything, my homework assignment from this morning, but we're already started. Anyone have a bad job? All right, let's try to figure out who had the absolute worst. What was your bad job? Your worst job?
Oh, there was a lot of them, but probably the worst one was where I was working for a guy who was three men who their sons all worked in the shop, and they were jerks. And the whole political stuff was very difficult.
Okay. Anybody else? A real nasty, like a dirty job, something really bad. He worked with drunk cowboys. That's pretty bad. Okay. Anybody else? What was yours?
One of my first jobs, I worked in a hotel cleaning up rooms, but it wasn't like a resort hotel. It was a truck driver's hotel.
So cleaning up after cowboys, cleaning up after truck drivers. Okay. Anybody else? Any other dirty jobs? Okay. Porta potty cleaner. Okay, that's bad. Okay. Did you happen to look on Google Images? Ready mix truck drum. Do you see one? Or concrete truck drum? Do you see one? It looks like a big spiral, sort of. Do you see a picture of the inside of one? Ledessa. Clean up after husbands. The worst job that I ever had was, and hopefully we'll be able to find one here. There you go. That's what, generally speaking, the inside, don't hit the X. Okay, there you go. Generally speaking, that's what the inside of a concrete drum looks like. And there's these big fins in there. And when the concrete goes in, when they reverse it, the spinning of the drum, it forces the concrete out the top. Well, if a driver isn't very good with the water or cleaning it out, those fins actually build up with concrete. And there was one time when there was concrete about a foot thick on both sides of every fin and all over the whole drum. And there's these hatches. Pastor Don, I don't know if you could fit through. But so that's why this sermon title is what it is, because he has a boss that's a jerk. Now, actually, there was a guy at least twice as big as you. His name was Bubba. And the way he got in the truck was he climbed in through the top. And anyway, the hatches, and I was told to observe a guy through the hatch just to make sure he was safe. And he was a little bit smaller than me, and this was back when I was in high school, so I was smaller than I am now, and that's the only people that we could get to fit through these little hatches. And he said, "What are you doing standing outside just watching me? Get in." So we had to have earplugs, earmuffs, hard hat, goggles, plus a face shield, and coveralls, and we put rubber bands around our wrists and ankles so dust and dirt wouldn't get in. And I was in there holding a shop light, and he was running an air hammer, chipping. And you know those cartoons where you see like somebody put a metal barrel and they hit it and they're like walking out like that. this is what was happening to me. And I don't know what happened, but I actually fell asleep inside of a drum, leaning up against a fin, holding the light. You know, my head was laying on concrete. And I woke up because he stopped chipping. And apparently whatever the commotion was, that what I got used to, I woke up and he's just staring there, looking at me. He's like, "Were you really asleep?" I said, "Yeah, I guess I was. I don't know what else to say." But tonight we're talking about dirty jobs, bad jobs, and specifically bad bosses. And the first truth, I guess, that I want to try to communicate tonight, and you can write this down, don't believe the idea that there's a perfect job. Okay, don't believe the idea that there's a perfect job. And I guess you can apply that to all sorts of things, because maybe some of you, a lot of you are retired, but you can say there's no such thing as a perfect church. You can say there's no such thing as a perfect home. You can just apply it to about everything. But the truth is, there has not been a perfect job since Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3. In fact, Genesis 3, 17 is a pretty fascinating verse, and I think as soon as I read it, you will know, you will remember it. Then God said to Adam, he said, "Because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, 'You shall not eat of it,' cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life." And that's when work and the ground and everything that we try to place our hands to was cursed. Originally, work was, what did God say about everything that was created and made? Good. Everything was very good. Originally, work was maybe not easy, but it was fulfilling, truly fulfilling, and it was a great thing. But after the fall, work became something that was painful, became something that was annoying, became something that was cursed. So never fall for the idea that there's a perfect job just around the corner, okay? There's a perfect relationship just around the corner. Whatever you want to apply, okay? There's this perfect job, there's this perfect boss. Those things are myths. And if you fall for that, or maybe you have a child or grandchild that's thinking that, and if they fall for that, they'll just jump from job to job. Ever known anyone like that? Jump from job to job. And if you do that, you might miss something that God's planned for you. Okay? Having said that, let's take a look at a young man with a difficult job and a difficult boss. Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. He had a very difficult job, and we're going to see that he probably had one of the most difficult bosses of all time. I know you're going to say, "Well, Pastor Josh, you didn't know my boss." We're going to see some of the things that this guy put Daniel through, and you might rethink your position. But here's another truth, a lesson. If you want to be influential within your company, make yourself invaluable. Make yourself invaluable. We're going to see three ways that Daniel does that just in these opening verses of the book. Daniel's going to prove that he could, and you can make yourself invaluable even with a horrible boss. Now just think back about Daniel for a moment, and I don't have to go in a whole lot of detail. I think most of you are familiar with him. Daniel lived in Israel, Jerusalem area, and the Babylonians came in, conquered them, and they took all the best, the brightest, the youngest, the best-looking people, and they hauled them all back, somewhere between 500 or 600 miles, and they brought them back to Babylon. And as we read these verses, we're going to see that it keeps throwing out this word, eunuch. And we don't have definitive proof, but since it's repeated over and over, it seems to indicate that Daniel was probably made into a eunuch, meaning that he could never get married, never have a family, never have children. And you think you had a bad boss? Okay? Look what Daniel's boss did to him. Okay, very bad. Daniel 1, starting in verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them for a daily provision of the king's delicacies, of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Basically, these young people were taken, and they were going to be brainwashed. Is that pretty fair? I mean, taught for 3 years. They're going to be indoctrinated. They're going to be told that everything they grew up learning about the God of Israel is wrong, and everything about all these false gods of the Babylonians, this is right, and this is the way we're going to do things. Everything that you used to do it, throw that out the window. This is what we're going to do now. And there wouldn't have been just, well, if you want to do this. I mean, there was pressure. Do you remember when Nebuchadnezzar made the idol? It wasn't like, oh, bow down to it if you want, if you feel like it. They were like, no, bow down to it or die. I mean, there's great pressure upon these people, and they're being brainwashed, they're being indoctrinated, and then look at verse 7. It just gets worse. To them, the chief of the eunuchs gave names. Not only did we take you from your home, your city, your homeland, your family, everything, not only have we taken your manhood, we're also going to change your name. You can't even have your old name. And look at these names. Daniel, Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Ben-Nego. Daniel originally meant, God is my judge. God is my judge. Anybody have any idea what Belteshazzar means? Any idea? Okay. Bel's protector or Bel's prince. I got a couple different ones. But anybody have any ideas who Bel is? One of the Babylonian gods. And we also know from the Apostle Paul's writings that behind every false god is what? A demon. And think to the New Testament. Was there anybody bad that had Bel in his name? Beelzebub was the devil, right? So he went from having a name that honored God to having a name that praised Satan. I mean, and you think you have a bad boss? Okay? I mean, we keep going through these. It's just crazy. Talk about a controlling boss. Talk about a bad situation. I mean, everything is just turning upside down. So what do you do when you find yourself in a rotten situation like that? Could be work, could be school, could be your house, could be what? I mean, what do you do? Well, it's easy in today's world, right? We live in a free market. Go get a new job. Daniel couldn't do that. I mean, he was basically in prison. So how do you respond? Well, look at verse 8. Look what Daniel does. Daniel purposed in his heart, he decided deep down in his soul that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel didn't have the option to quit, but he decided he wasn't going to let this get the best of him. He decided, I'm not going to live this way. I'm not going to be indoctrinated. I'm not going to let my circumstances make me a complainer. I'm not going to do that. So he decided that. And then we're going to start looking at some things here. I think I said at the beginning, three ways to make yourself invaluable. Three ways to make yourself invaluable. The first one there, we just read it. When he decided in his heart that he was not going to do that, what does he do? The last half of it. It says he requested. He asked for permission from his superior, his manager, Ashpenaz. He didn't demand, you have to give this to me. He didn't undermine. He didn't go around to all the other people and get everybody stirred up. He didn't sabotage. He asked for permission. He responded with respect. You know, I think in a company, you can make yourself invaluable by simply being respectful, even when you're not respected. I heard a story about a Christian. He's apparently a pretty well-known Christian recording artist. I'd never heard of him, but apparently he's totally blind and had been that way his whole life. And he was very gifted musically and very driven to succeed. And he taught himself all kinds of instruments, taught himself to ride a bicycle. I don't even know how that's possible. Taught himself to do all kinds of things. And he got along. And most people didn't even know he was blind. He got along so well. And he was at college, and he was walking down the hallway, and somebody bumped into him. And the guy says something like, "Hey, buddy, watch where you're going." And the blind man says, I'm sorry, I didn't see you." And how's that response? Even when he was mistreated, even when he was disrespected, he responded with respect. And if you have that kind of reputation, even if your boss is a gigantic pain in the neck, you're going to move up. People are going to respect you. You're going to find yourself that you're irreplaceable within that company, within that job, within that career. Verse 9. Now, God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the eunuchs. Another way to make yourself very, very valuable within your company is to establish a track record of faithfulness. Now, in order to find favor in the eyes of your immediate superior, he must have been being godly. And obviously he was being godly because God sort of helped him out here. God blessed him, so he was a blessing to others. Even though he had been taken from his home, been taken from his family, had his manhood taken from him, his name taken from him, but he's still walking with the Lord. He still has integrity. Even though it must have been difficult, somehow he proved himself worthy to Ashpenaz. And when he asked this question, God sort of helped him out. And then verse 10, look at Ashpenaz's response. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you endanger my head before the king." If you sort of read between the lines, I see a great relationship between Daniel and Ashpenaz. They've built up a good communication, and Ashpenaz is almost like saying, "Daniel, I'd bend over backwards if I could. I'd do whatever it would take to help you. But you know, my hands are tied here. I have a direct order from the king, and if I give you a different kind of food or substitute or something and he finds out about it, I'm going to get my head chopped off." And it's almost like, "I want to help you, but I can't." Look at verse 11. So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you in the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies as you see fit. So deal with your servants." So he consented to them in this matter and tested them 10 days. So Daniel strikes a deal. He says, can we try an experiment? I love doing that, especially here at church. If somebody has an idea, somebody brings me an idea, or I have an idea, I'll often say something like that. Let's try this as an experiment. If it doesn't work out, we'll move on, try something different. This is what Daniel does, and here's the third way to make yourself very, very valuable at work. Offer solutions, not complaints. You notice that? He doesn't go complaining, oh, you know, Ashpenaz, what's going on? He says, hey, I have an idea. Can we try this? It's a solution. See, if you're walking around at work and you're just constantly complaining, constantly whining, constantly whatever, making the world around you miserable as you are, people don't want to be around you. But if you offer solutions, wow. When your immediate superior gets promoted, what are they going to do for you? Promote you. They're going to bring you with them. So Daniel, he makes himself invaluable. Then look what happens in verse 15 and 16. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the other young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. Now, I don't know much about eating vegetables. I eat some every now and then. Are potatoes vegetables, Bonnie? I don't think they are. Are they? Are they? Okay, then I eat vegetables. I don't think any diet, from a natural perspective, I don't think any diet can totally change your appearance and health in 10 days. Maybe there is some miracle diet that I've never heard of. I happen to believe that this was supernatural. It was God. Okay? God was doing this. And he just, time after time, if we had time to read the entire book of Daniel, he just proved himself invaluable over and over and over again. And it started right here in the first chapter. Okay, verse 17. As for these four men, young men, God gave them the knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understandings in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued unto the first year of King Cyrus. You ever wondered what would have happened if Daniel had showed up in Babylon with a bitter attitude and complaining? What would have happened? Head chopped off, yeah, probably. Instead, Daniel had 60 years of influence, and he served 3 different kings, if my math is correct. All by making himself invaluable, having a good spirit, doing his best. If we put it in Jesus terms, New Testament terms, he was a light shining in the darkness. He was the salt of the earth. Then if we start thinking about New Testament things, perhaps there's one who had a worse work environment than Daniel. That was Jesus. We already read the verses in 1 Peter. In the middle of all that suffering, in the middle of all those false accusations, in the middle of knowing his painful death and a separation from fellowship with the Lord, that was coming. In the middle of all that terrible suffering, Jesus still loved each and every person around him. Even the people that were hanging on the cross, what did he say? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They don't even understand. Of all the times that a person would have a right to complain and whine, that would have been it. And what an example. And that's even what those 1 Peter verses say, doesn't it? It says, Jesus is our example. You remember reading that just a few minutes ago? Of how to act and work and live in the most difficult of situations. Is there any questions, comments? And I think I had a question from this morning. We're supposed to think of where error is shutting out truth. I don't know, maybe somebody had thought of one of those too. Anything?
Their religions and looking into them and how they changed and the requirements that they have, and we discussed that the people are drawn in because they make it look like the truth. A lot of the other religions start out, they believe in God and Jesus is God's son, but then when you look at it closer, and I always say that the lie won't stand the light of truth of Scripture, but those were examples that those other false religions were trying to drown out the light, mm-hmm. So that they could live the way that they wanted to live, because they'd look at the Bible and say, well, that sounds really nice, but and that's good, but we just can't live with that, so they'd change it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just always discussed how... The false religions start out looking something like the real religion, and just they're counterfeits.
And sometimes they even use the same theological terms.
Yes, and that's what we talk about. They'll use the words that Christianity uses to
but they mean
to draw you
things.
In. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Any other thoughts? Questions? Any other ideas, maybe a thought that you had where error is shutting out truth? Tina. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Bill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought I saw another hand. I see people like covering their eyes and looking down. Is there any other questions, Tom? Oh, okay. Well, now we all of a sudden had three. Tom, first. Good. Yeah, I've had people over the years come to me, you know, oh, I got fired from here, I got fired from there, and everybody liked me except for one person. And I'm just like, if you were really valuable to the company, the bosses would be foolish to let you go. And so sometimes we've knocked those arguments down arch. Denny. There's this speaker, I think his name's David Barton. Is that the right name? He goes around explaining how the Constitution and all those founding documents were basically pulled right out of the Bible. And I looked him up on the internet, and there's this right-wing watchdog website or something, and they're all big-time liberals. And they just, oh, he's lying and he's full of nonsense. When the guy actually puts the words of the Bible right next to the words of the Constitution, that's not lies. That's just obvious. And yet they just continue to try to suppress the truth and hide it. Yeah, that's a great one. I appreciate that. Is there any others? Carrie. The gossip about...
Just make your mind focused on that, so you're distracted from what really matters.
That's it. The celebrity gossip is a distraction, okay? You didn't hear it from me first, but you're hearing it from me now, okay? It's a distraction. Jeannie. And I said, I think it was a couple months ago, I mentioned how, you know, even 20 years ago, if a newspaper or TV station reported something incorrectly, they would run a retraction the next day. Never. Doesn't happen today. Doesn't happen today. Valerie. Valerie was mentioning teaching the alternative lifestyles to young children at even an early age. That word is even a suppression of truth. That, you know, all these words that they choose, alternative lifestyle, a pro-choice. Well, we couldn't call it what it really is, pro-death. That sounds too mean. So let's suppress the truth and say, well, this is pro-choice. We want to support the choice of women. And you pro-lifers, you guys are crazy.
We're anti.
Anti-choice? Is that what they call us?
Anti-life.
Yeah. Political correctness?
Mm-hmm. Everything
Well, MSNBC is now saying the reason Ebola is spreading in Africa and the reason why two people have got it here in Dallas, it's the NRA's fault. It's gun owners' fault. They're literally saying that. You guys laugh at me, but I am not kidding. Caleb. Yeah, wow. Suppression of truth all over.
Yes, no, Friday on the news, there's a case before a state Supreme Court where they are suing for rights protection for a chimpanzee.
What do you mean?
He's to be granted personhood.
Okay. See, if I ever ran across Sasquatch, that's why I would never shoot him. They'd charge me with murder. They would. I'm telling you. I'd have to catch him somehow. Well, I think that's pretty much all we need to do tonight. Let's just wrap it up with a word of prayer, and then we'll have... Kelly, did you want your meeting in here or another room? We'll just gather up here front for those of you that are going to be in that meeting. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we are thankful for this example of Daniel. We're even more thankful for the example of Jesus and what he did. And Lord, we do know that at times our lives get